In this episode, we're going to actually talk to Bobby Shalhoub, a good friend of mine, also a great real estate agent. And in this episode, we talk a lot about his background, kind of the things that makes him unique. One of the things that I really appreciate is candidness about his family and his why. And we also discuss some things about construction, food, and his background and his Lebanese culture. So stick around. I think you'll enjoy it. Bobby.
Yes.
Shalhoub. Welcome back, buddy.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Hey,
thanks
so we just closed transaction together.
We did yesterday.
Man, some super excited clients.
Very excited.
And very, very thankful. They were tremendous to work with. Thank you so much for the opportunity to serve them.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
It cracks me up because sometimes it takes that momentum to get over the hill and then you get to the finish line and they're looking back and is there something else?
Yeah.
You ever have that experience?
Yeah.
Where they're like, are we really done? Can I really celebrate?
Yeah.
That's always the exciting part.
They still couldn't believe it. I mean, yesterday we had keys and they still was like, is there anything else? Are you sure?
Yeah.
Are we really done?
Yeah.
Can we move in?
Yeah.
No, we're done.
But this is why we do it, right? It's the joy of allowing that family to get to the next step in their life. This is milestone moments for them.
Sure, it certainly is.
And I remember we started this conversation almost 8 months ago.
It was.
8 months ago, literally the first time we met. And, trying to put a plan together, sometimes you think it's going to go. Other times, it's like, I'm not committed. Then all of a sudden it's like, I think we want to do this. And
right.
When they commit to it, it makes what we do, go time.
Yeah. Right.
And you put a lot of effort into making that happen. So congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Super excited.
It was a tough road. Eight months and it was a tough road.
Yeah.
But they are super appreciative. I'm appreciative. And what better time of year?
Oh, right? Yeah.
I mean, it's all year. Any time of the year is a good year and a good time. But I think, this all came full circle with it being the holidays and Christmas time and so forth. It was a great gift, if you will, for them to sell a property and then purchase and move in all at the same time. So it was rewarding all the way around.
Yeah. One thing that I think back on this particular transaction, there were some things that we put in the mortgage plan that made it possible because it was a step up in cost monthly, but putting together the plan and paying off certain debts when they sold allowed this to be a manageable change.
Right.
And your buyer slash seller, because you sold their property and helped them buy another one, they got what they wanted. I mean, they got a house that had what, RV parking?
Correct.
Right? It was a better layout for their family. It allowed them the flexibilities that they wanted, even in an interest rate environment that they weren't overly excited about. But they were able to take advantage of what you negotiated for them in the 2-1 buy down. That allows them some flexibilities, going forward. And, just give them a little bit of breathing room, if you will. But I think they're going to be super excited with their house. And I think about these as being moments where we actually are seeing the fruit of the labor and time.
Right. Yeah, it came full circle, really. I mean, it was a long road, but I think there's a lot more advantageous to this transaction than meets the eye, if you will.
For sure.
So they're in a much better position, both financially and we'll call it economically, if you will, but they're in a just much better position.
Well, emotionally too.
Emotionally as well.
Yeah. I know they're going to be really blessed by this. So that's awesome. Another thing that we just talked about is planning for 2024.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
big year.
One of the things that we've seen in our market locally is a real kind of hesitation, right? It's like putting the brakes on. And I think we have seen that because of interest rates, right? There's just this sense of what's going to happen next.
They're waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah. And I want to talk about that briefly. So from your experience and what you study, because I know you study the market, I study the market. One of the things that I always focus on are what are the things that we can control? What are the things we can't control? Some of the things we can't control are just providing information that we know these things will happen in this order if we follow the plan.
Right.
We can't control interest rates. However, I can give you an idea of direction of rates, but we don't know when someone is getting into contract, mm-hmm. right? And moving forward for planning for 2024, what are some kind of short-term goals that you have kind of thought about that you want to put forward to do more for your business?
Internally for my business is the question,
yes,
right?
Yes.
There's so many. I guess let's highlight, one or two.
Sure.
I have to be in the office a little bit more,
mm-hmm.
right? That's the biggest thing for me. I have two offices.
Mm-hmm.
I have an office, and then I have a home office.
Mm-hmm.
And, we find, we, and when I say we, I mean me, we find excuses to kind of work from the home office because it's convenient, right? But one of the short-term goals that I have is to actually get out of that comfort zone, go to the office, get on the phones, dial clients, and just kind of interact with people, right? That's the goal for me for 24. That's one goal. Another goal is to kind of revisit past clients, right? I try to do my best to stay in the know with them and stay in touch, but I could still do more to continue to stay in touch, right? So those are just kind of like two of the high level, 30,000 foot view of what my short-term outlook for 24 is.
Now, looking back, they say anything that you want to improve on, you need to have some measurable goals, right? Mm-hmm. So I know you probably haven't done this in a lot of detail. You probably have more information at home, and I kind of put you on the spot. But
sure.
What were some things that you wanted to accomplish this year that you maybe didn't accomplish? And you look back and say, well, if I'd have taken these, different approaches, maybe I could have, made that happen. Are there any things that stand out to you?
We started out the year strong. So I did have, three or four items on my to-do list mm-hmm. that we did actually accomplish. One of which was a contractor's license.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
That one we didn't get to do.
Oh!
Yeah, we were...
something you wanted to do.
It was one of the things we wanted to do is get a contractor's license. We were poised to purchase a business.
Okay.
With an existing license. There was a change in plans. The individual decided not to sell. Mm-hmm. We kind of just put a pause on that. But the other goals we did reach, we did buy investment properties. We did some flips.
Good.
Which we were really proud of. Mm-hmm. So those goals were met. Obviously, we had some really lofty goals as far as, sales in general, whether it was residential or commercial. We did see a little, drop in business. Could we have made those goals? It was a little bit tough because, like you said earlier, people just kind of pumped the brakes, but they pumped the brakes really hard.
Yeah.
And you and I have some experience with a client that's a younger couple, right? And they were really deflated when rates changed, and it impacted their affordability quite
sure.
a bit.
Sure.
Right. So I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with they really hit the brakes, and they just came to a complete stop. So there was a lot of that was a result of the shortcoming on the financial or on the numbers goal, if you will. Not so much the financial, but on the numbers goal, quantity.
We're going to see more change coming in 2024, I believe, just looking at what the Fed announcement was yesterday. Mm-hmm. They made mention, that they would not increase the Fed funds rate again, and potentially in 2024, with market conditions staying stable. If the economy is able to drop into that 2 range, if you will, for inflation numbers, even if it's 2.9, it didn't say that specifically, but that's something that a lot of analysts are saying, they may actually cut the Fed funds rate. They committed to verbally potentially 3 times. Some analysts are saying as many as 6 times. Now, what that could mean across the board is 0.75% decrease in the Fed funds rate. This is important to mortgage lenders very specifically because we look at inflation as a measure of cost for living, right? If those costs start to flatten out and go down, it gives optimism in the market. So if that happens, we potentially could see interest rates go down for the positive. We've already seen a nice little run in the last 48 hours where interest rates actually improved almost 0.5%.
Right.
So that younger couple we're talking about may come back into the fold again.
Right.
Because of the affordability. Now, one thing we still don't have enough of is
inventory.
That's right.
Yeah.
So one thing that we've talked about kind of off the record has always been, what will drive inventory? Okay. The first thing I can think of is the need to sell basis. So what categories or items that you think of are reasons or motivations that people will sell their property?
That's kind of a loaded question because, we live in California, so there's a lot of things that are happening here. Relocation is one.
Okay.
That's the first obvious thing that comes to mind. There's a lot of folks that are relocating for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
It could be employment, it could be family, it could be whatever, but there's a lot of relocation. So that's also a catalyst for people to sell. The other one is, seniors retiring, more people coming into the fray, retiring, and they're downsizing, if you will.
Okay.
Right? So that would provide a little more inventory into the market. Again, the apprehension from what I see is have prices cooled, right? So there may be some apprehension there. On the flip side of that, you know, those seniors that are potentially in line to sell may not want to sell because their children are moving back in with them, right? So we got to kind of balance that out a little bit, if you will. So those are some of the things that we're seeing right now, is that there's just that level of apprehension all the way around. But some key indicators is, you know, people moving in and out, and then people retiring, downsizing, and also moving to, you know, no income tax.
So moving out of the area.
Yeah. You know, we'll talk about, you know, Nevada and,
sure,
and Florida and so forth. So
one thing that we've noticed, and it's kind of a big picture item, is some of the motivations have been major life events,
right?
They have a new child. Mm-hmm. They have a 3-bedroom place. They really want a 4-bedroom. They want to move to an area that maybe has better schools, or they want to move closer to major transfer areas. Like they can get to the Westside Parkway,
right?
And get to the freeway faster. So that could potentially be opening very, very soon, like next maybe 30 to 45 days.
Right.
And that actually will make a nice connection between the 99 and the West.
I'm excited for it. I'll tell you.
Because you
excited
live pretty deep in that area. I don't.
Northwest,
but
yeah.
My point is that it's a real nice connection point. So I see that those will be some indicators too for 2024. Now, one thing that's been the hesitation has always been, I've got a very low rate right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. We're battling that.
So one thing that I've seen as a trend is many people that take on debt, they do so with budget in mind, but a loose budget. Let me explain. So somebody takes on a mortgage and say the payment is $1,700, okay? They were at $2,300, okay? So that $600 savings is great. But what happens is that when they start saving that $600, they wind up adding debt. So we call that lifestyle creep. It means that the things that you didn't have, you start now getting.
Wanting.
And you start absorbing that savings in other areas. And this includes new vehicle sometimes, more credit card debt, maybe charging things and letting them float for longer. And the reality is that those interest rates are typically higher than 8, 9, 10%.
Oh, absolutely.
Average credit card rate right now is 24%.
24%, that's right.
Yep. So you ask yourself, how far are you getting ahead by paying $100 over what the minimum payment is? It's not really
doing
it. You're
not getting anything.
Yeah. So later on, they're going to find that second portion of their debt structure has ballooned to a point where it doesn't make sense, even though they've got such a low rate on the first, to keep paying that, because they'll never get themselves out of it. Okay, so budgeting is very important, but they don't do it strategically enough. It's a very loose budget. Okay, now another side of the coin is this: those people that have such low rates, they want to pay it off, and if they're focused on doing that, there are plans out there that I can even assist with to tell them, hey, if you apply this much principal,
right,
you can get yourself at this payoff date and be completely mortgage free. Did you know over 40% of homes in the United States are owned mortgage free?
Over 40%?
Over 40%.
Yeah, I thought it was just around that number. But
yeah, so the crazy part of that is that when you get to that point, retirement seems more doable, mm-hmm, right? Because you can live off of less. However, you still have property taxes, which never will go the other way negative. I mean, they're not going to go down. They're typically going to go up. And then insurance expenses, right? So there's always this sense that you have some expense ongoing and maintenance. And I think it's important when we're preparing our clients to think, you know, this may be not your forever loan or your forever home, but these are some steps we can do to make it more comfortable while you're in these particular situations.
Right. Yeah.
So I want to transition real quick and talk more about you.
All right.
So I learned a little bit about your background from our time together, but do you mind sharing a little bit about your background, kind of where you're from, where you grew up, kind of what brought you out to California? Because I know you're not a native here.
No, I'm not. No. We might be here for a little while.
Let's talk, man.
If we're going to go that route. So I'm a Lebanese. I was born in Lebanon. My parents migrated to the United States back in the 80s. We landed in the East Coast. We had family already in the United States. So we landed in the East Coast, and that's kind of where I grew up. Went to school there, friends, family, sports, football, basketball, the whole nine yards. My dad owned a business there. And then lo and behold, you know, I had gone on to do other things, and I had a small construction company. My dad had a small business, and he wanted to semi-retire, he and my mom. So we had family in Las Vegas. They used to visit on occasion.
Sure.
So they felt that Vegas was a good place to semi-retire, and they did. I was traveling once, twice a month to go visit them because, you know, I'm very close with my family. So at that point, my dad was like, hey, you know, button it up over there and, you know, come to Vegas and we'll figure out something. We'll maybe open a business or what have you. Unfortunately, that didn't come to fruition. So I ended up getting a managerial job with Toll Brothers, one of the largest
builders.
Home builders.
Yeah.
Right. So I got a managerial job with them, and I built some communities out there. And that was around when the market kind of tanked a little bit, and, you know, construction and, you know, the whole housing crash. Filled in where I could, you know, just to get make ends meet. I had bought a new house at that time for myself, and you know, it was like the worst time ever to be unemployed. Managed to get through, and hooked up with another commercial developer. So we started doing commercial projects, restaurants, hospitality, financial institutions, banks.
And is that how you met Maurice?
That is how I met Maurice, yeah.
Because he's on the commercial side.
He was on the commercial side, yeah.
We're going to talk about this because we're going to talk some fishing later.
Okay, yeah. Actually, he's on his way to San Diego to go on the boat.
You're killing me, man. You're killing me. Okay, continue. Okay, so commercial.
So we got into commercial construction. I was a project manager. And okay. We did some things on the strip, you know, some high-end retail things and some food service. So I do have some hospitality background, some food service background.
And we're going to talk about food, too. So
I love food.
Me, too. You can't tell.
So yeah, so we so that's how, you know, I kind of graduated, but I've always been around real estate, and I've had colleagues and friends and you know, acquaintances like, you need to get into real estate. You need to get into real estate. Well, I kind of missed the boat back then, but then I kind of when I came to Bakersfield, it was like, okay, now's the time. It's just, you know, you have that something clicks, right? And then you're like, now's the time, and I studied. Passed on the first shot, got with a brokerage, and, you know, the rest is history. Here we are, you know, having this conversation.
Sure.
This is a little bit about my background.
Yeah. So let me ask this question. A lot of why we do things has to do with motivations intrinsic, right? So I know this about you, Bobby, as a friend. You're a very passionate person.
Yeah.
And things that get you fired up get you fired up.
Yeah.
And that's okay, right? But there's also something deeper. And I think that that's something we don't ever talk about because it's personal and private. But I believe for you, it's your family.
Yeah.
That's right. Providing something that maybe your daughter didn't know that she didn't know.
Right.
But she's enjoying the fruits of your labor and efforts that you and your wife have put forth. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we weren't a rich family growing up. You know, my parents were hardworking, you know, Middle Eastern Lebanese family, you know, came to the U.S. for exactly what everybody else comes for a better life.
Sure.
You know, there was, you know, Lebanon is lots of turmoil. And if anybody knows the history about Lebanon, I mean, it's a great place to be and it's a beautiful country, but there's just a lot of turmoil.
Sure.
So my folks growing up, it was food on the table, roof over your head, clothes on your back.
Mm-hmm.
That was the goal, right? I remember just wanting to play a musical instrument and I had borrowed one at the time and this was elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
The borrowing time expired and I had to give it back.
Oh.
So I went to my dad and I said, hey dad, you know, can I get this saxophone, you know, so I can play an instrument in school and so forth. And we just couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
All right. We couldn't afford it. And it you know, that stuck with me. And growing up and, you know, getting an education and working hard and, you know, developing myself, that always stuck with me. And I said, you know, if given the opportunity in the future to provide for my children, that's what I'm going to do. And that's kind of the drive, right? Do I spoil my child? Yes, I spoil my child, but there's limitations.
You're not alone, man, don't admit.
There's limitations,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure.
But I take it very seriously and I take it to heart. And it's like, I She wants to play golf. I'm buying her a set of golf clubs. We're playing golf. She wants to go fishing. We're going fishing. She now her new thing, and you know this because we've talked about it, is that, you know, acting and
sure.
and entertainment and stuff like that. So she's passionate about that at a very young age. So I'm encouraging it, and with the blessings that I have, I'm able to do that, right? So yeah, the drive is there, and it the drive is my family, 100%.
Yeah, no, and I see that. It's very present in how you are, how you are around your family. And I can see the passion that you have and sometimes a frustration because sometimes our kids don't realize what they have.
Right.
Because they haven't seen something we've really been on the other side. Yeah. And you're like, kid, if you just understood, it really wasn't this easy to do this. No. When I was a kid, I wanted to have all these things. I didn't get a chance to do that, right?
We have that conversation at least once a week, believe me.
But, you know, it's still one of those things you can put your head down at night going, you know what? I'm still thankful that I can do it.
Right. Every day.
And the opportunity. So I'm going to say something that sometimes doesn't resonate well with everybody, but it has to do with, I think the mentality of knowing family that has struggled, right? Or you, when you were younger, having to struggle with them and not wanting to be in a position to ever have your children experience that.
Right.
Right. But then the second part of that, also knowing where you have overdone it. And I'm on that path right now where I think I overdid it with my kids. And I love them dearly, but I also want them to say, you know, Dad, you're right, but it's going to take a little bit of the real world slap you in the face to get that, because as time goes on, you start to realize that there are certain things that they experience or see or have opportunities to take part of that they didn't. And later on, they want to, and they realize that it's a lot more expensive or way more time away from work or their family in order to get those things completed. So providing that opportunity early and as often as you can, don't take that away from people.
Right.
So Jackie Chan famously told reporters that he was not going to leave his kid anything. And he said this, it's like, they didn't give me anything. Like, I provided for them. They need to make their way in this world.
Yeah.
And famously wealthy,
yeah.
you know, actor and Kung Fu, the dude did like majority of his stunts.
Right.
There's so many broken bones in his body. It's one of those things, if you ever to look at like all the broken bones in his body and they yeah. did a list, it would look like some type of game of, what was that game that you would stick little things in? It would shock if you,
the doctor game.
Yes.
Yes.
Now I forget it. But anyways, it's like that. Like, this guy's got every bone in his body pretty much have yeah. been broken or damaged because of what he did. But he said this was his art, like his sacrifice, but not for his kids. He didn't say that. It's like just to entertain. That was his thing.
You know, I ran into a gentleman. He's a manager of a restaurant. Okay. And he said the same thing to me. We were having a conversation about, you know, life and just a brief, really brief conversation, very surfacey conversation. And he said the same exact thing to me. He said, they didn't work for it. I worked for it. So they could figure it out on their own, just like I did. And I looked at him and I said, really? Do you really believe that? And I was blown away by it. I really was blown away by it. You know, I have that mentality to a certain degree. But I think my degree is I want to make it easier for them, not harder, but teach them the lessons along the way, right? And I think that's kind of my philosophy is like, hey, it's not always this easy. You have to understand. And where I really bring it full circle for her is when I have to work on the weekends or on Sunday. And Sunday at 2:00, I have a meeting or I have to hand keys or a showing or a client calls and there's questions to be answered. It's like, I have to go to work now. It's like, okay, well, why do you have to go to work? It's Sunday. And now I provide the explanation like, okay, we get to go on vacation because we work 7 days a week.
Yeah.
But on Wednesday, when you have a half a day and we get to go have lunch together, I'm not working.
Yeah.
Right? So there's a balance.
Sure.
So, you know, you try to teach them the good side and also the sacrifice side. I don't want to say the bad side because it's not. The sacrifice. And the sacrifice is being at work on Saturday and Sunday when they need you, when your clients need you.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because we take for granted sometimes the flexibilities we have and then the inflexibility we have. You're right. Almost handcuffed in real estate because you're working with clients that typically work during the day, right? And they want to meet you when they're available, when their days are off. And then you want to help them, but you also realize that you have a family and a life. So it's difficult to balance at times. And I know in my side, being in the banking side, the bank's open from 8:30 to 5.
Right.
Right? But it doesn't mean the client's always available during those times. So we try to make it as I would say it, accommodating as possible. But we also want to be clear
right.
that there's only certain things we can handle during the business hours.
Sure.
Right? So, but performance is important too. I believe that pull-through is such a key component. So there was a forum on Facebook of mortgage brokers. Mm-hmm. And there was a comment that I read this morning. And I'm thinking to myself, how would I handle this? So here's what the comment was. There's a loan that I was unable to close after 45 days, and I'm devastated. In my 2 years in the industry, this is the first one. Mm. And I thought to myself, if it's a purchase transaction, unless there's something wrong with the property or something major happened to the borrower,
right.
that loan should have closed. So you've got a lot of people on the forum that are basically saying, oh, you know what? Hey, you're going to learn from this. Try to build them back up so they can buy in the future. They're not going to give him a referral. They're not going to refer their friends or family. They're not going to have faith in the industry. And they're devastated.
Really? Right?
They're going to go hide in a hole. Think about that as a client. If you went through 45 days worth of escrow only to be declined on your loan, that's devastating. And chances are it was something that they just did not do enough due diligence on the front end preparing
right.
that loan.
Yeah, there has to be a reason why that it went that long.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. Well, especially in this market. I mean, escrows move very quickly. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, due to constraints that are outside of our control, our transaction took longer, right? But the reality was the borrower's always been approved.
Right.
Right? So it's not the borrower's ability. It was other factors that affected our transaction. But my point is that escrow should have not been taken beyond the inspection period if there were problems with the loan.
Correct. And that's what I'm saying. There was something that was missing and there was a disconnect somewhere along the lines. It just didn't by itself end up at 45 days and not close.
Yeah.
So there was a disconnect somewhere.
Yeah. And that's why communication is key.
And I wanted to piggyback on it. You said that word. I'm really glad you said that word. So a couple of things. Communication is key between all parties, okay? When I say all parties, I mean every single person that's involved with the transaction. And I'm a stickler for that, and I really am, and I harp on it all the time. There's more than one or two people associated with the transaction,
mm-hmm.
right? We could get into the list
sure.
of who, but there's communication has to flow every single way possible. And then the other thing, too, is I want to piggyback on what you said just a second ago, is that we provide a service. So there's times that we need to be available for that service, right? Kind of like, and that's why I'm blessed to be, to have hospitality background.
Mm-hmm.
I can relate to providing services at certain hours. You know, people think restaurants open up at 11 and close at 11. No, restaurants are open at 7 a.m. and they close at 2 a.m. You know, there's a lot of upfront prep work and then there's also the cleanup afterwards. So there's a lot of in between. So the point I'm trying to make is that there's a communication piece that has to flow every way. And there's also a service piece. And you have to be available to service your client and give them that excellent service when they want it. Granted, within certain time frames, but you can't just say, I shut my door at 5:00. They're going to find someone else to service them.
Yeah.
And I think we can agree on that.
Yeah. So many people don't know that our producer, actually, Michael Fugit,
uh-huh.
has a background as a traveling musician.
Is a traveling musician? Is that yeah. true? Or you
absolutely.
Just, is it true?
Yeah,
all
seriously.
Right.
So
good to
and
know.
It's actually pretty cool because he actually used to travel across the country. And he did this for church ministry stuff.
Uh-huh.
And actually had swag that he sold at the concert.
A following.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's actually really cool.
There you
so,
go.
We're going to have to do a podcast with Michael because he's got a lot of cool history. And he, too, is actually not from California.
Okay.
So he's from Michigan. So
okay.
it's always
yeah.
neat to kind of hear. Actually, Michigan Wolverines were like 13-0, I think. Yeah. Were they 13-0, Michael?
They're number two seed. 13-0. They're the number two seed. So I was rooting for them.
It was those last three games. They didn't even have Harbaugh.
I was rooting for them. Even though I'm a Notre Dame guy, I was still rooting for
them. I'll tell
you
what, though. It's always neat when you see a team that's just willing to just be, just as I say, scrappy and just get it done against all odds, right? So it's going to be neat to see them in that bowl game. They're playing the Rose Bowl this year.
Yeah. I'm hoping to take it all the way.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. It'd be neat. Because I think that's going to give them the berth, I think, to the national championship, if I'm not mistaken.
That's what I mean. I really do hope that they make it to the national championship.
I think it'd be really good.
Yeah.
But it's always cool to see. But, you know, Michael's eyes light up. And like, did you see the game? I was like, no, I didn't see the game. I saw the score.
I saw the game. It was a great game.
Well, I want to transition now. You talked about food service, hospitality. Tell me in your background how food has played a role, not just personal. Let's start with business stuff. Tell me about the business stuff on how food was a part of your past.
Business, you mean real estate business?
No. Just like you told me, restaurant. You had a restaurant that you had helped manage and in the past. Is that right?
Yeah. So we, pizzerias. It was a Neapolitan pizza place, a wine bar. So there was a concept that the owner brought, and we helped design it from scratch. I mean, we just took an empty gray box and we turned it into something special. Mm-hmm. We removed parking spaces, we put a patio, we had accordion windows and heaters. I mean, it was a great, great place. During the construction time, the owner and I really became very close. And he said, listen, you know what? If you want, I'd like to make you an offer and bring you in as an assistant general manager. Mm. And it was right when the market was shifting and construction was really taking a beating. So I took him up on his offer, and we worked that that opportunity for about 2 years, and everything from wine, front end, back end, you know, dishwashers going down and cooks leaving and one of the prep guys cutting his finger open. It was, you know, it was a really neat experience.
So you got to see the ups and downs of actual, like, day-to-day stuff.
Day-to-day operation.
The average consumer does not see.
7 days a week.
And the appreciation of that going, hey, guys, it may come out hot, tasting great, you know, the service was good, but that didn't come by accident.
It's a lot of effort. Lot of effort
and
that goes into it.
And I think today we have made so many shortcuts available to people that service has gone downhill.
Yeah, there's a lot of effort that goes into it.
And those restaurants, I think, that have extraordinary staffs, they do that because they have good management and they're putting the priorities on service.
Right.
Right? Now, prices may reflect it, and sometimes they're not that much different, but it's just that much better.
Right. You always remember, I tell my clients this, so I kind of correlate it to real estate as well. It's like, you always remember that one experience where either it was super bad or it was super good and you're going back and you can't wait to go back.
Yeah.
So same thing in our industry. I mean, you have a really good experience. I mean, not all transactions are super smooth and easy. I mean, there's going to be bumps along the way. It's how you navigate those bumps that resonate, right? So same thing I tell my clients. And then once you put it in, you know, it's amazing. When you put things in food terms, everybody's like, okay, I get it now.
It's relatable.
It is relatable.
Because most of us eat.
100%. We eat too much.
And we like to eat together. So yeah. One of the things that I've always appreciated about you is your creativity and cooking background. So I've been truly blessed by having to sat at your table with your family.
Thanks.
And having some,
you're welcome, anytime.
Some fresh perch that we just caught. Like, I saw that thing come out of the ocean.
We caught it.
Into the bucket.
Took it off the hook. Yeah.
Cooked it. And I mean, you put out a very nice spread, and that's not even close to some of the videos you've shared with me with some of the beautiful layouts of these feasts.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and tell me a little bit about, like, let's just call it Mediterranean food. Is that right? Is that the right way to put it?
Yeah, Lebanese food to be specific, right? Lebanese food and a Lebanese maza.
Okay.
Right? So Lebanese maza is just a table from end to end loaded with appetizers.
Yeah.
With every single appetizer you can possibly imagine within, you know, the Lebanese family.
Sure.
And we're talking everything from hummus to baba ganoush to salads, tabbouleh, fattoush, you name it, it's there. Pita bread to your heart's content. And then as you enjoy that for a few hours, not for a few minutes, for a few hours, then that kind of takes a sideline And then the grilled meats come down, which is your kebabs and your keftas and everything like that. So you know, Lebanese people are very well known for their mazas, and you know, we enjoyed the Lebanese drink, the arak, together.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just leaded too. I'm telling you, man.
That's
octane. I had to go to work after lunch. I'm like, okay, let's just sit here for a little bit.
Next time we do the surf perch thing, we'll do it on a weekend there, so we can kind of nap afterwards.
But the good thing is this. Here's the thing. I think that for the Lebanese people, is it called maza?
Maza.
Maza. Okay. It's an experience, and it's like a downtime for everybody to enjoy company, food,
right,
relationship. It's not something that you're in and out. It's not fast food.
No.
Right?
Definitely not. But you're sitting there for a while.
But it creates community.
Relationship.
You know, and yeah. I think that's such a beautiful thing. And a lot of cultures do it. United States has a tendency to try to make everything faster, shorter, quicker, easier.
Right.
Right? What was the joke? It's like, yes, we've got the 5-minute abs, but we have the 3-minute abs. If you have you're getting cheated, we'll send you the extra 2 minutes for free, right? It's like, well, we want the results.
Instant gratification.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's funny when we go fishing. We've been on fishing trips where it's been a very long boat ride.
Very long.
And we're chasing bluefin tuna, and those suckers are finicky out there, right? But what you told me is that it's something that you want to get, you know, fish on the deck, but they're not always wanting to give up the ghost, you know? Yeah. They don't want to come in.
No.
We want to catch them,
right?
And fishing is one of those things that'll test your patience and your pocketbook.
Oh, yeah. Especially offshore fishing.
Yes.
I mean, any fishing will test your pocketbook, but offshore fishing is a different animal altogether. You're kind of graduating from say, the JV team to the varsity team,
yeah,
if you will.
Yeah, and they're moving.
And really quick.
Yes. And I can tell you, the thing that I've learned just seeing some of the more experienced anglers is that there's a lot of finesse. And those that are able to bring stuff on the boat, and you see other people catching and others not. So there is technique, there's style, there's a level of experience. And then also, more importantly, just almost a willing to like just try to get it done.
Right.
You know, I remember being broken off on a bluefin, and it broke my heart. I'd fought this thing for about 7 minutes, which is a very short amount of time.
Very short time.
But I didn't trust the drag. Right. And broke off. Right. And I'm horsing this thing, and I need to allow the fish to fight.
Right.
Right. But inexperience, that's all I can chalk it up to. Right.
Yeah. You kind of eliminate the variables. Your equipment is number one. You know, the quality of the trip that you're on, the length of the trip, weather conditions, you kind of do the best you can to eliminate those variables. And at the end of the day, you have to just, like I say all the time, is you have to fight the fish. It's you and the fish. And when we're talking about bluefin, just to kind of give some context, we're talking anything from 50 to 150 pounds. So when folks are watching this, they may think it's a
not,
small
it's not
fish.
A little perch, it's a pound.
It's,
you know?
It's anywhere between 50 to 150 plus pounds. So,
yeah. But it's amazing. We've had such a long run with the bluefin here in California. I mean,
not normal.
Yeah, not normal at all. And one trip that we took, it was on the jig strike.
Yeah.
We had great success, but it was mostly yellowtail.
Yellowtail and Dorado that
trip.
Yeah,
but it was fun. It was wide open when we got into that spot, and it just happened to be that they just kept coming.
Yeah, they were eating.
Yeah.
If they're hungry, they'll eat.
Yeah. And unfortunately, not all schools do that, but right. When they are on, man, I was exhausted. Like literally once we finished that session, I went down and took a nap because I was just beat.
Fun times.
Yeah.
We haven't had a time like that
No,
in a while.
We need to do it again. We'll get out there. I know. And, you know, with El Nino, they keep predicting warmer water is going to continue to move north. So we might see that, you know, continue here on the West Coast.
There's guys that are out right now offshore.
Okay. So tell me that. That was what I was going to say. You transitioned earlier. Maurice, you say he's on his way now?
He's on his way to San Diego right now. He's on a 3.5 day.
So what's he targeting out there? Is it bluefin?
It's going to be everything. Bluefin, yellowfin, if they get into yellowfin. There's been some reports of Dorado,
mm-hmm.
And then yellowtail whenever they see
that's
the
super late
the kelp
season
patties.
Right now for that, right?
Just the warm water.
Yeah.
You know, but they're traveling a little bit south. So they're going south towards Ensenada, Colonnet, and maybe southwest. Where we fished last
got
time.
Got it. Okay.
Right? So south-southwest in that warmer water. Weather conditions are going to be excellent this weekend. So I think they're going to do well. And the trip he's on, they're all experienced anglers.
Sure.
it's not an open party. It's kind of a private.
I think obviously you pay more as a premium, but you also get better quality service and staff and things like that too on these smaller boats that I think are, well, it doesn't have to be small. It just needs to be experienced anglers. They're not going to all just go out on a, it's not a party boat. Let's just call it that.
Yeah, this is a private trip. I think it's $2,800 all inclusive. So it's pricey. But it, again, we talk about quality and service.
Expensive sushi, right? Man.
But every sport is expensive.
Yeah, that's true.
Golf is expensive. Yeah. You know, the gun club is expensive. Yeah. Everything's expensive.
I know. I'm just sometimes a little frustrated. I'm like, man, I want to catch more fish. But, you know, the funny is I give away a lot of my fish.
Yeah?
It's horrible.
I didn't do well at all this year.
I enjoy the fishing part. I don't eat all my own fish, right? So I like to give it away, and some people are like, really? I'm like, yes. So it's a blessing to them, but it also frees up my freezer a little bit too, so.
So, you know, on that note, you know, right? So Maurice goes, which you and I know, Maurice goes 5, 6, 7 times a year, and he does really well. He's just times it, and he just does really well. But he too just gives away all his fish.
Yeah.
You know, he has a lot of constituents and a lot of friends and you know, guys on the construction side that he does work with all the time.
Sure.
So it's kind of like, you know, let me recognize you for, you know, helping me out. You know, one hand washes the other type thing.
Sure.
But he too gives away most of his fish. I would say probably about 80% of it he gives away. Keeps enough for himself. But then as he runs low, he's on another trip, you know, bringing another batch home. So I expect he'd probably come home with about 500 pounds this weekend.
Oh, 500 pounds.
He'd probably come back home.
Yeah, that is just nuts. That's a ton of fish. Pounds. I don't think I've ever seen that much fish come on the deck. Well, maybe.
Well, he's on a 3.5 day.
Yeah, I guess if you're looking at volume, these fish are going to start at 30 pounds and go up from there. As a smaller, that'd be like a dink for them on a trip like this.
Yeah, I would suspect that he's going to be in at least 50, 60-pound fish. So just for bluefin, he's going to bring home at least, I would say, if he limits out, probably 6 to 8.
Wow.
So, you know, do the math. And then that's that one species. And then it just multiplies from there.
Yeah. That's so crazy.
Hopefully we'll be able to get out on some trips in 24 and kind of redeem ourselves for a lackluster 23.
You know,
I didn't
what?
Do very well this year at
it's
all.
It's all good. We're going to get out there. And the fish, if they want to be caught, they will be caught. So we'll just find out a way. So let's talk again real quickly about kind of your typical plan of action when you're going to go talk to a brand new potential listing. What are some things that you talk about with the potential seller on things that you bring to the table that you'd like to maybe be a little bit different or things that you focus on when you're talking to a potential seller?
You know, I listen a lot, right? I don't try to take over the conversation. I listen a lot. I ask questions. And it's more conversational than anything. It's not an interrogation. And the goal for me is to make the client, the seller, feel comfortable and then kind of open up to me. You know, I want to know what their motivations are and what they're trying to do. From there, I can build a plan.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and I refer everything to temperature. When you first walk in the door, if you're going in cold, their temperature is 100 degrees and they're boiling hot because they're already on the defense.
Mm.
Right? Because they think that you're going to have them sign a contract right then and there. Sometimes you do, but it all depends on where their comfort level is and how fast you could take their temperature from 100, for example. And I'm being, you know,
sure,
extravagant and, you know, to down to like a nice cool 65 degrees, you know? And then that's kind of the goal for me is when I walk into that appointment, if you're walking in cold and you don't have a seat at the table, you know, you want to kind of lower their temperature a little bit, get them off the defense, and have them open up to you. And then we plan accordingly from there, right? And then kind of gauge their timelines, gauge their motivations, why they're doing it, what time frames they're looking at specifically, and then just ask some very surfacey questions before we dig into the, you know, the nuts and bolts of it. Once you see that temperature drop and they feel comfortable, you see it in the shoulders, they start to relax. That's when you can open up the conversation and start asking the more intricate questions. And then from there, you usually kind of automatically segues into a contract signing. It's sometimes they'll do an interview while they're interviewing multiple agents, which is fine. You know, I encourage it. I mean, If you're going to a doctor, obviously you're going to ask for a second opinion. If you're buying a car, you're just not going to walk into the lot and say, okay, I'll take that one. You're going to go to another dealership and see if you get a better deal. Mm-hmm. That may or may not be the case in real estate, but they're checking personalities. And again, I just want to make sure I preface this in advance, is that sometimes you don't have a seat at the table and you're going in cold, right? If you've already been referred and you have a seat at the table and they're expecting you and they've heard about you, then, you know, that temperature's kind of, you know, around 80 degrees, if you will. And that's when you kind of work your way down to that 65 level. So those are kind of just some, you know, tidbits that I have come across, and those my planning for the future. It's worked. So
yeah,
you don't win them all.
No. But that, I think that's the difference too. I think personality. How do I describe this? A match as far as getting together and communicating effectively is not going to be the same for everybody.
Right.
I've had instances in my career where I've been given an opportunity to, you know, help a client, but they were also talking to two other lenders as well. Mm-hmm. And they went with the other lender. The thing that I realized personally is this: I can't hold that as being a personal affront to what I'm doing, because sure. I know I do quality work.
Sure.
And I build good relationships with clients that, you know, want honesty, integrity, transparency, follow through, and consistency. But maybe it's just not a good personality match.
Right.
Totally fine. I've been told that I talk too much. surprising, right? But sometimes I give too much information. I actually complicate things. So I'm working on these things, you know, right. Trying to become better so that I can help the client where they're at. Understand that where my heart is and what I do should be from a place of service.
Right.
But also helping them to see things that they didn't know that they didn't know.
Right.
Right. So because you've been down the path before, you can actually guide them so that there's very little hiccups.
Right.
So, for example, if you see a professional do anything, they make it look easy. But then you try it on your own with very little guidance, you find that it's very challenging. And then you go back and you do it again. And then you fix some things. Then you go back and you do it again. Over time, that repetition creates more comfort and you become able to do it more smoothly. But if you work with somebody that's been down that path hundreds and hundreds of times, they can basically mitigate any of those losses
right.
of time and energy and putting your effort in the things that are important. So, you know, that temperature is a great way of thinking about it. You know, somebody that comes in real hot and you have to bring them down, it's really you trying to come to some equilibrium, I think.
Right.
And that balance is key.
Right.
So, yeah, that's a great thing. Now, let's talk about buyers. When you talk to a brand new buyer and they're kind of not sure about the market, what are some things that you discuss or maybe some things that you like to bring up to have them think about?
You know, I'm going to build on what you just said with regard to buyers. Sure. So we still use the same temperature. I personally use the same temperature analogy, right? And, you know, the buyers are on defense because they have a cousin or a brother or a friend of a friend, or someone that's referred them already, mm-hmm. and they want to kind of interview you and we just want to see the property. We break the ice right off the bat, and then I just basically tell them, we're not here to sign anything. Mm-hmm. We're here to view. And I kind of like to put some humor behind it. It's like, hey, you go to Macy's, you try on a pair of pants, you like them, but you're really not sure, so you put them back on the shelf. That's exactly what we're doing here today, right? Mm-hmm. We're at Macy's and we're gonna look at this house. We're not gonna sign anything. There's no commitment here. I'll walk you through, answer some questions for you, and then we'll step outside and we'll have a conversation. And I'm like you. I like to provide value and I like to provide that information. And sometimes I get a little long-winded and I catch myself. And when I do catch myself, I basically tell them, and I'm kind of jokingly say, I apologize in advance, you know, I'm getting long-winded, but the reason for that is because I want you to be well-versed, and I want you guys to have the ammunition to be able to move forward intelligently.
Sure.
So if you could learn from my experiences or from what I bring to the table, then by all means, you know, let's move forward, right? But I'm not getting long-winded just to tell you stories.
Sure.
I'm giving you real-life experiences so you can match what you have going on to what we provide, right? And that usually kind of brings us together. So it's all about breaking that ice, breaking that moment. And again, want to preface, this is not having a seat at the table with the buyer, right? The previous conversation was with the seller. Again, that you're cold. They just called you out of the blue. They saw your card somewhere, your sign, what have you. And they're like, okay, let's get together with Bobby, right? So 9 times out of 10, we're getting referred or they know of me. But in certain instances, they don't. And that's kind of how I navigate that. It's bringing their temperature down as well, because they automatically think, because they've heard from someone who told them, you're going to sign something right away. Be careful. Be careful. Don't sign anything. And I just eliminate that right off the bat. Say, folks, we're not signing anything. It's great meeting you. I'm happy to show you this property. Let's tour around. If you have any questions, I'm here to answer them. And I do my homework in advance on the particular property and to say, if there's a solar lease, for example, I'll inform them of the solar lease. I won't hold it until later. Just give them enough information. And then the other part of it is to make them feel comfortable, to make them know that I'm knowledgeable at what I'm doing. I'm just not there to sell them something or get them on a contract, right? It's like the more information you provide at the right time, they're like, wow, this guy really knows what he's talking about. I mean, he's told me everything about this property. He's told me that it has solar, it has a saltwater pool, the seller's motivated, there might be some concessions available, or they're firm on the price, what have you. But that builds trust.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, for sure. One thing I think it's important that you bring to the table too, that a lot of people don't understand, is your construction background. So that's a value add, because you can look at a home and notice things and bring them to the attention, not to say they're a problem, but
right,
say this is something we should probably have looked at, not to alarm you, but this is a big purchase and I want to make sure that you have the best representation here to protect yourself, but also provide you with, okay, got it. It was disclosed to me.
Right.
Do you see that that's a value add?
It is, but to be honest with you, obviously, I have to be very careful.
Sure.
In that sense. But for example, if I see there's a leak at the return, I'll bring it to their attention. I'm like, there's a water stain here, or there's some kind of stain here. We'll have to get that looked at. So I will bring certain things to their attention, or if I see the condensate that's leaking, or they bring it up and say, hey, why is that leaking? Like, that's a great question. We'll have to look into that. But again, there's like a fine line, because I'm not allowed to say those things.
I agree. So sorry to put you in an uncomfortable position.
No, I just think
it's a value
to
have that background.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, a lot of these people do what they do, their day job, but they don't look at houses all the time.
One thing comes to mind really quick is by the pool where they plant palm trees, and you'll see the roots of the palm uprooting, uplifting the concrete slab, and it's encroaching on the pool plaster. And believe it or not, people don't recognize that.
Mm.
So those things like that, I'll bring to their attention. But yes, I do it in a limited fashion.
Yeah, no, and that's good. I just think that there's value sometimes that are the non-said items that you don't necessarily list on your,
on resume.
Yes,
yeah.
Because people find us through referrals, through word of mouth, through sometimes advertising, but a lot of times it's really just going to be, hey, I know a person.
Right.
Right. So you want to be that person, though.
And always.
Hopefully it's going to
be
that person. Through a positive experience that a past client had, or somebody that has known of the quality of the work that you do that brings them to that table. And I like to use baseball analogies because I enjoy it. And it's like the number of at-bats. It's like the more you see, the more equipped you're going to be to know when to swing and when to bunt, and when to just walk, right?
Yep.
And that all comes down to just seeing different pitches. And I think that repetition is key for that. Well, cool. Are there any things you want to talk about right now, Bobby? Because we're pretty much done with what I had on my list here.
No, I'm good. I'm looking forward to, 2024. I think it's going to be a great year.
I think so, too.
I think the people that hit the brakes are going to slowly come off the brakes, and they're going to get back into it. I hope inventory catches up a little bit, but again, that's our job to make sure that happens. And we look forward to getting out on an offshore trip.
That's right, man.
Several
offshore
trips.
Let's do it.
All right.
Thanks, Bobby.
Thank you, man.
Thank you to Bobby Shalhoub for his time on our podcast today. Really enjoyed learning a lot about you and your background and kind of your why and how you can help your clients. I'm really excited that if you have any questions that you'd like to know more about Bobby, please take a look at the show notes below.